Okay. Hello, everyone. Welcome to training call number one for Smart Body, Smart Mind 16. I will date this. It is the 24th of September, 2024. Maybe that's a good omen. Got two 24s in there. And we're going to get into our first training call. Just some notes that there are handouts. I've got mine here. All of these are on the site where you would have logged in to come here. One handout is fill in the blanks. So there's blanks. This is very old school where you're going to follow along with me and write in the handout. If you choose to not do that, that's fine as well. We also have a handout that has all the answers. So each training call has those two options. If you like paper, which I do, I recommend printing all of them. They're all available for you to print right now. Those listening to the recording and those obviously here live, just a reminder to titrate. And we'll talk about titration over and over again as we get into this course. But titration means little bits. And so little bits. Little bits of learning, little bits of sensation, little bits of noticing our bodies, orienting. You'll get better at this and it'll become second nature as you get into the work more and more. While this is about a 90-minute call, this is a 90-minute call. If you feel at any time that you need to have a break, you need to have a pause, you need to get up and walk away and turn the volume down, really listen to that. This is the beauty of online, is you're not going to miss the lecture the way you might have in the olden days where there was no audio recording and to get the lecture, you had to be there and take notes. So just know that that old world of I have to stick this out, really try to move out of that paradigm. Everyone agree? Everyone gonna listen to their impulses? Okay. Again, those on the recording, you're not going to see the chat. We're not going to share the chat because there's not a lot that's going to go on there. There's no Q&A in the chat. It's just for little prompts. You know, someone wasn't sure where to find the handouts, really simple things like that. If I do ask a prompt of you all, and there's some chat responses for everybody on the recording, I will read some of those out. So those who can't be here live will also hear what some of their peers are sharing in the chat. So a little more housekeeping today because it's the first time we're doing this, but wanted to make sure everything knows how everything works. So let's get into it, shall we? Before we get into the actual content of the training call, the very top of that page, I have in big pink, let's practice the nervous system basics. So to me, these basics are things like feeling, and I'm going to name them out, and then we're going to play with them. We're going to groove with them for about 5 minutes before we get into the training call. So one of the basics might be feeling your ground. In other words, what is under you? For some, it might be a chair. For some, it might be a couch or a sofa, a futon. For some, it might be you might be at the kitchen table. So you might have your arms on a desk. Someone might be lying down on the ground or in bed. Some of you might be outside. Some of you might be outside. So just feel that ground under you. And what you notice, the pressure, the temperature. Way back when we were little babies, we felt this stuff. It's all we felt. It's all we knew of the world was the sensations under us before we could think, before we could speak, before we could even move. You know, crawl and roll, all these things, walk. So, this is a very primitive Noticing, to notice the ground under us. And out of curiosity, when I ask that, again, we're covering the nervous system basics. I call these the basics. Who had not been feeling that? So when I brought that into your invitation, into your awareness, did you go, oh, right. So let me know in the chat if it's easy for you to pop a chat in there. So someone said, yeah, me didn't feel the ground, wasn't in my awareness. Someone said, yes, I did, and very overwhelming when I did feel it. Yeah. So if we're not used to sensing this environment under us, it can be very activating. Couldn't feel my body at all before you asked. Yep. Not aware of the warmth of the carpet. Needed the reminder. Too much anxiety. So, yeah, a little too much adrenalized energy. So, there wasn't this ability to drop in and feel. And then another, I feel too much. I'm always hyper focused. So, there's a spectrum here, right? Thank you, everyone. Thank you for your comments. Another person said, felt quite numb, not aware of my body. So yeah, these are elements that we will build and build and build. So this is one thing to pay attention to. Another is the world around us. So however you do it, you can use your hearing, you can use your eyes. Allow your eyes to actually come away from the screen and orient a little bit. Orienting was in the first lab last week. Who remembers the orienting lesson of looking and seeing? And it doesn't have to be far, it can be close. It could be the papers in front of you, but it could be, a bird that you see out, or at night you might look out and see the moon. The moon was really bright here last night. So that's orienting, just the ability to bring our focus and our attention into the world around us. Now, of course, there's some who might not be able to see due to visual problems, being blind. In those cases, we still can orient to the environment through sound, through smell, taste. Even if you don't have actual food on your tongue, you can sometimes taste what's in the air. When you walk outside and you're like, oh, it's humid today, or it's more dry today, or it smells like spring, or it smells like summer. What does that mean? It means we're sensing the environment. Something's changed in the biome outside. Another basic would be our breath, which is always there when we're alive. But sometimes we don't notice it, and sometimes we try to focus on it too much. So notice when I mentioned breath, if there was an immediate shift in how you breathed, proper English, Irene, right? So did your breath change when I said the word breath? Let me know. Let me know what happens. And this will become a very important focus in noticing in our work is how can you notice the breath and not change it? Because when we're working with our physiology, when we're working with old traumas, our breath actually might need to slow down sometimes, or it might need to speed up. And that's where allowing the breath to do what it wants is going to be very important. And yeah, a few folks here, many of you said, note, as soon as you mentioned it, it changed. When I orient, I notice my breath is very shallow. I had the impulse to change it, but resisted. So here's another thing. If you change it, that's okay. The question is, can you be aware that you just changed it, right? Being able to pause and notice this is a human trait. This is a human trait, this part of our brain that can actually pause and choose a different direction is unique to us. Now I know there's probably some people here who know primatology and other animals of high-level mammalian intellect or cognitive functioning. Often, though, in those animals, they're very conditioned to do such things, whereas we, even in the most highly stressed out situations, we can put a game face on. We can get ourselves collected and not react. And that is our birthright as humans, this ability to shift and change. Part of our work here will also be allowing ourselves to follow impulse. So that's another nervous system health basic. Follow our biological impulses. So this is very primitive. This is when you are thirsty, do you have a drink of water? When you're truly hungry, biologically hungry, do you eat? When you're too warm, do you cool yourself down? When you're cold, do you help warm yourself up? These are all aspects of nervous system regulation. Of course, our body will sweat if we're too hot and will shiver if we're too cold, but sometimes we want to help regulate by changing clothing, changing temperature, those sorts of things. Going to the bathroom, simple things. Again, you'll learn about following your impulse this week in lab two, but what you may find, and I hope you find, is as you get more connected to these impulses, this also helps to ground yourself because you're not holding something in, which actually takes us out of the here and now. So let's come back to just the basics of the ground, noticing this. I caught someone said in the chat, when you're regulated, do these things happen naturally? And the answer is yes. The answer is yes. Real deep self-regulation is being completely connected to our physiology and the environment at the same time. So we'll learn about this. I would call it multitasking of awareness as we go on. Right. Okay, so let's get into our handout. I'm just going to move my keyboard here so I don't hit it. Okay. So remembering to, as I go through this, at any time, take a break, and I will try to every now and again to remind everyone to notice some of these things. So even though this is an intellectual exercise of listening and writing and learning, we still want to have this connection to self to the best of our abilities. Now, I don't want anyone to feel like they're forcing and forcing and forcing to sense all these things. Dip in and out. Again, that word titration. Dip in and out as you need to. Oh, another thing I didn't mention. Following your impulses might mean moving. So maybe you have an impulse to move. Maybe you have an impulse to close your eyes for a moment. Maybe you have an impulse to stretch and yawn or sigh. These are things that we, again, tend to suppress. Often due to our training in the school system, right? For many of us, we were brought up in a school system of sit still, don't go to the bathroom, and don't cause trouble, right? So how can we start to get our impulses back in a way that feels good? Because when we're not allowing that impulse to happen, what happens to our higher brain? Our cognition isn't as sharp because we're storing up survival stress. We're storing up the need to move to do all the things that we're meant to do. Okay. So first line there under practicing nervous system basics, this swimming pool. Swimming pool and beach ball analogy. For some of you know what this is. For some of you don't. Who here knows what this means? It was in my healing trauma videos. The first video that is on the resources page on the site. I am going to review it in full because it is one of the most simplest and powerful analogies to really explain what the heck are we doing here with this nervous system stuff, and why is it important to build capacity, which then in turn creates regulation. So let's dive in, grab your pens. First line there, the swimming pool. Oh, by the way, this handout has more words than normal. So a lot of our handouts don't have this many words, so you're going to be writing a little bit more than normal this time. So the swimming pool is your body. That's the first one. Now, I could say the body just is everything, right? But sometimes when we hear the word body, we think of more just the physicality of our bones and our skin and that kind of thing. So within that, next line, brain. Nervous systems, plural, because there's more than one nervous system. Organs. Another fancy word would be our viscera, but our organs. It's the stomach, the digestive system, pancreas, spleen, kidneys, liver, gallbladder. Tissues. So when I say tissues, I kind of mean our muscles, our fascia, our fat, our adipose tissue, our ligaments, our tendons, our cartilage, which is between our bones. Sensations, next line. Heat, cold, butterflies in the stomach, tightness in the throat, warmth in the belly, many sensations, emotions, fear, happiness, surprise, disgust, anger, joy. We also might call those our feelings. I use those words interchangeably, emotions and feelings. We will get deeper into what emotions are in future training calls. And then the final few words there, everything inside of your body. So it's just everything inside of your body. So in this case, I'm talking about your swimming pool. So swimming pool is my very childlike way of saying your body. Next line down, you've got the picture there of the swimming pool. So the balls, so you've got the beach balls in that pool. The balls are your stressors or stress and past traumas, adverse events, and I'll repeat this, shock traumas, etc. So the balls are your stresses, past traumas, adverse events, shock traumas. This could be misattunement from a care provider. It could be verbal, emotional, sexual, physical abuse. It could be generational trauma, the things that we carry from our ancestors and our past. So those are all the balls in there. Next one. So it's all about, when I say it's, I mean the work we're doing here. It's all about more space. So those are the two first words, more space, meaning more space in the pool. And release and flow. Release and flow. This will all make sense as we get into a couple more pages here. I mean, if you just look at that pool, it's very cramped, right? There's not a lot of space. In other words, when you have a vessel, in this case, a swimming pool, filled with beach balls, you're not going to want to jump in it. Probably would be actually quite dangerous. And there's no room for flow within those balls. The water, of course, is flowing, but it's still not as free as it could be. You can't put much in it when it's that full. Final line, flow. So flow is a simple word for coherence. That's the next word. Coherence. 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 And just a reminder, all the answers are on the other handout that is titled Handout with Answers. Coherence. So let's go to page two. So on page two here, we've got a bit of a blank spot. So flow and coherence explained. So what I'm going to have you do, and it doesn't matter how this looks, we're going to walk through it together. You're going to draw four circles across. So one, two, three, four that aren't touching. Basically like four beach balls that are in a row. So draw four circles that aren't touching. And then the number eight, draw the number eight inside of each circle. If your circle wasn't big enough for the number eight, don't worry about it. Just put something in there that just picks eight. So there are two circles connected. Who here knows what the infinity sign is? It's the eight on the its side. Now you're going to draw the infinity sign or eight on its side, connecting circle one and two and three, and three and four. So you're just going to loop them almost like a chain link fence. So again, there's four circles in a row, not touching. You're going to draw an eight in the middle of each circle. You're going to draw a big eight on its side between the circles to connect the dots, essentially. And then the grand finale is you're going to draw a line from the fourth and the first so that you connect and then you connect. So you make a big circle. Now, this is a very rudimentary, crude visual of your body, meaning everything is connected. The cells, we could think of each circle as a cell. There's trillions of cells. We could think of each circle as an organ. We could think of each circle as head, spine, pelvis, legs. It really doesn't matter. The key is that there is this connection between these parts. The circles are four parts, and then we connect them. And I have this drawn on the answers page. So having good flow means good coherence. So if we think of these circles connecting, they want to be in flow. We want our body system to be in flow. One thing I see when I was in practice, and I just saw this last week when I was teaching, real humans in a space, which is always fun, is someone will sit and they might be noticing something, and you can kind of tell, and let me know, some of you may have seen this, where the breath is only up in the throat. It looks like the rest of them is kind of robotic and not breathing. It's like there's no life in the belly or in the diaphragm or in the legs. What one would say, this is a system that isn't in good flow or isn't in good coherence. And as a person starts to grow capacity and they start to wake up parts of these body parts that have been kind of dormant, shut down, maybe injured, right? Or offline, dissociated, you start to see, and I'll use my hands to describe this, you'll start to see this breathing. And the whole system starts to breathe. And this is a classic principle of all sorts of medicines, Chinese medicine, yogic traditions, really good breath work would teach good flow and coherence to the whole parts of the body, energy work, even osteopathic work, craniosacral work, and a good physical fitness routine is going to get all the body warmed up and talking with each other. It's kind of like, to use another example, if you've ever been to the orchestra or the symphony, and you remember if you've ever seen it, the beginning, everyone's practicing their instruments, right? And it kind of sounds like a cacophony of nothing. You've got the string, you've got the percussion, you've got the brass, and they're like, ee! And then what happens? The conductor comes up, whew, everyone goes quiet, and then the music starts, and there's flow. That would be coherence of, say, a symphony. And then they make for some beautiful sound in the form of music. So when we think of our human body, we want the same thing. We want to have this flow and coherence within all the cells, all the organs, but also in how we think. Because what's common in our world? We live from here, neck up, and then that cuts off the rest. Someone might be brilliant in their mind, but they got no idea they have a pelvis or 2 feet. Some are very aware of the body, but they don't know how to problem solve. We want both. And then to add one more piece, we want to also connect to this environment around us because that's what keeps us going. We need sunshine, we need food, we need people, right? So this is meta, what I'm saying here. It's not just for yourself and selfish to the body. It's also how you relate. And one thing you'll notice as you start to get more regulated and you grow more capacity, you will start to flow in your environment so much more. You won't bump into things. You won't get into accidents in the same way that maybe you used to. You will find the right people because you just have more consistent, healthy, regulated energy and more coherence. I hope that makes sense. We'll get into this more and more and more. So, if you didn't get the drawing, no stress. You can go and look at the picture under the answers and you'll see what that looks like. Okay, I'm going to have a little water here. Oh, yeah, someone said Ilya's movement comes to mind. Yeah. So, one of our teachers who will teach movement via some pre-recorded videos. They're called Ilya's Movement Lessons. Again, his background is in dance and Qigong and Tai Chi. And these are beautiful practices for getting flow in our body without having to think too much about things, right? It's just getting the movement in, getting the breath coordinated to the movement. Good speech is flow and coherent, right? For those who have raised children, babies, right? When they talk at the beginning, do you understand them? No. And then they start to get proper coherence and flow with their vocal cords, their tongue, their breath, they can breathe. This is all part of our apprenticeship of being human, is learning good flow and coherence with the skills we do. Athletes are good examples of this too. Okay, what is containment? So we just talked about coherence. What is containment? I mean, the word in itself, container, right? You have a container that has stuff in it. So containment is staying embodied. That's the first word, embodied. Embodied in your body. And connected to the environment. That's the second word. And connected to your environment. And your internal state. Your internal state. So, three things there. Containment is staying embodied and connected to the environment and your internal state while experiencing bodily experiences. So, sensations, feelings, images that might be visuals, your thoughts, so your thinking, your movement, your behaviors, no matter how intense or activating. So, for many of us, as we start this journey, we'll have something stressful occur and it shoots us into another world, right? Whoever experiences that. They have something what we might call triggering or activating or highly stressful, and we disconnect. We don't know where we are. We're dissociated. For others, they might feel too much in the system and it feels like fireworks inside, right? Containment is being able to feel these things on the inside, but stay within, in some ways, a state of regulation for where you are in your current moment. So we'll keep getting into this. Containment is, again, just this ability to not suppress. Sometimes people confuse this with suppression. It's not suppression, it's being able to be with all the things and stay fairly grounded. I can feel my feet. I can see the environments around me. I notice my breath. It's a little scary. It's a little intense, but I can handle it. Right. Again, with ch I always use children as our example, because we're essentially learning what maybe many of us didn't get when we were young. A little one gains more self-regulation as they can contain big feelings. Right. When a baby is born and they're in distress, they just cry and cry until they're soothed. As they get older, as they become a toddler and a 4-year-old and a 5-year-old, their ability to be with discomfort, I don't like that, but I'm going to feel it and I'll be okay. That's them containing their internal experiences. Okay. So, next line down, a few words that we're going to get in here in a second. To increase this flow, space, containment, and capacity, and have more chance for release. And by release, I mean taking those balls out of our pool. This would be the classic trauma release, releasing our old memories and stressors that aren't good for us, that we don't want inside. We want to work and practice these six things. Now, this is not all the things, but I've chosen six for the purpose of this being our first call. There are more, but this is what you will learn in the first 4 weeks of SBSM's labs. So the first one, you've already done orienting. Orienting. So seeing the world around us, knowing we're in the world. I know there's some people here who might be already working with people, some healthcare providers, healers, body workers, might be some therapists here. Never assume that the person you're working with is aware that they're in the world. Seems strange, but it's true. It's very true, right? Again, that higher brain of ours, not only is it masterful at changing things for the good, it's masterful at keeping us safe from the harms that we would have lived through and survived in the past. It's quite exquisite when we really think what we all can live through and survive and still make a living and do things, right? Number two, awareness. On page three, I'll get into these a little more. So I'm going to go through these and we'll get to page three. Awareness is number two. Number three, self-awareness. For fun, let's do a little movement. Take your hands. If you want to play, you can. You don't have to. Don't force anyone. Self-awareness is me. This is me, right? Saying hello to your body, hello to your skin, hello to your core, your head, your hair. Kids love this, you know, patting parts of the body. Like, and what do you do again when you're little, when a little one is little, baby's little, and you're playing? It's like, these are your feet. This is your nose, right? These games we play with little ones, it's to teach them this is you. Yeah. And then we start with other things, counting, all those things. But we do this stuff often naturally without realizing it. And then as we get older, we get too cool for school and we stop doing these fun little things that actually can connect us to our body. Four, follow your impulses. Follow your impulses. If I were to add a word to that, it would be follow your biological impulses and the ones that are healthy. So that's like a little footnote. Because sometimes our impulses aren't good for us. Like, I want to eat everything in the refrigerator, right? Or I want to drive recklessly because I'm so angry. Or I'm going to scream at that person because they cut me off. And that might be an impulse, but it's a survival-based impulse. For me here, impulse is, are you hungry? Are you thirsty? Are you not hungry? This is one thing that we will really start to find as you get more tuned into your biology. You get more accurate with your cues, right? Animals in the wild don't, well, with the exception of those that hibernate, like bears, they don't overeat. They take what they need and they go on, right? When they're thirsty, they look for water. So again, these biological impulses connect to the autonomic nervous system in a very deep way. And one way to improve the health of your autonomic nervous system is to listen to these impulses. Because again, we've kind of bleached ourselves from listening to them due to our social conditioning, upbringing, all these things. Next one, joints and diaphragms. This won't make any sense to those who are brand new, and that's okay. It'll make sense in week 3, 4, and 5. Joints really means the joints of our body. So where bones connect, that's a joint. Like hip joint is where the thigh bone connects to the pelvis. The ankle joint is a little more complicated because there's a lot of bones in the foot, right? Elbow joint. There's also spinal joints, right? Where we have the vertebra connect. Sacrum to the tailbone is a joint, sacroiliac joint. So we know these joints because of just maybe injuries that occur, for example. But we'll work with the joints in this course, and it can be very powerful. Diaphragms, those are, one is an actual diaphragm, others are more abstract, but it comes from osteopathic traditions. There might be some craniosacral therapists here. There might be some osteopathic knowledge here. The diaphragms follow essentially parts of the body. It actually lines up with the chakras in Eastern tradition, top of the head, eye, throat, heart, solar plexus, root. It's also where the glands are. So there's glands, many here. We would call it the third eye, but there's the pineal gland, the hypothalamus. There's the thyroid, thymus, kidney adrenals. Again, you don't need to know these, but for those who know some of this physiology, these diaphragms are within levels of the body, and we will work with all of them. You will all learn how to work with your diaphragms in SPSM, and it's very potent. And then final one, kidney adrenal interface. So the interface between the kidneys and the adrenals. I just mentioned the adrenals in relationship to kind of that mid-back area where the solar plexus would be. And I will save explaining that onto page 3, kidney adrenal interface. And then all the words are written on page 3 in case you aren't sure if you've got your spelling right. And before we get into page 3, take a second to just listen to your body and see if you need to move a little bit. I'm going to shift my weight a little bit on my chair here. I'm going to have a little more tea. Another example of coherence, for some reason, this popped into my head, so I'll share it because I like to follow my impulse when I'm teaching as well. You know, when you hear someone who's speaking, but they speak really monotone and they speak just in one pitch and it doesn't change, and it can sometimes make you fall asleep because it's very robotic. If anybody's had lectures like that, presenters, and it's really hard to stay awake because there's no what we would call vocal prosody. That would be speech and expression that doesn't have a lot of coherence. There's not a lot of flow. And so, good flow, again, if you think of a really amazing singer, they go up and down and they make different sounds, even though it's the same person. So, that would be someone or a presenter who has really good capacity, good coherence, and they can project their voice out and change it based on who's in front of them. This connects to our work, goes back to the baby. Because you don't want to talk to a baby in a monotone, straight face with no affect. Hello, voice goes up. Ooh, voice goes quiet, right? When we get into deeper labs, we'll learn about healthy shame. And when we start disciplining little ones, we have to put a tone of that was wrong, right? That can hurt. And it can't be a flowery voice. It has to be a bit more baritone, a bit more listen, this could hurt you. And so our voice as humans has to also have this flow and coherence. It has to change. And that comes with more regulation. I've seen it time and time again and with students as they get more space in their body, as their swimming pool gets bigger, as their capacity gets bigger, there's literally more space in these chambers of their body for making different sounds. The throat opens up. It has more softness or more sturdiness. So I wanted to just say that so that you could connect this to regular life. And I can almost guarantee as you start to interact with more people, even just, the barista at the coffee shop or whomever might be working at the bank that you need to talk to, you will start to see these levels of flow or lack of flow in people. And it's their capacity. Right? It's their capacity. So, page three, that was a little tangent, but felt like sharing that. So, orienting. Orienting. So, this action, this exercise, the goal is to spark up the social engagement nervous system. You're looking, right? You're engaging with the world and your senses. And this is a fancy word. Ventral vagal. You would have learned this in the biology of stress videos that were last week, and we'll get deeper into this. But it's the ventral vagal portion of the parasympathetic nervous system. This is where that vagus nerve comes in, which is a nerve that comes out of the brain, trickles down, and it goes parts of it to the face. Parts go to the heart, parts go below the diaphragm into the belly. But the one for social engagement is mainly in the face, throat, and heart, and everything above the diaphragm. The only reason it's called ventral is it comes out of the brain and it goes in front of the brain stem when it goes down. So for those who know French, ventre, front, the front of the body. Dorsal is the flip side, which means the back, do. So that comes the back of the brainstem, but we're not going to get into that one today. So that's orienting. So it's we want it to spark up social engagement. We want it to calm and soothe our system. Now, the tricky thing here, and you will read this if you go into the FAQs of each lab. And by the way, for those who want to do a little extra study, each lab has an FAQ section, and there is a plethora of really good reading and information there. One thing that some of you might find when you orient, it might actually not soothe you. It actually might cause more activation. That's okay, right? That's okay. It just shows that your system isn't comfortable with the environment yet. And it makes sense. If our environment was where our threat came from, parents, accidents, systems, whatever it is, natural disasters, it might be a little dicey to orient and look out there because out there was dangerous for whatever reason. So again, this comes back to slowly building our capacity through other ways. All right, next one down, awareness. This one's pretty simple. This is with the world and our environment. Because we can be aware without directly orienting, right? We can sense the temperature. We can sense sound. We could be reading a book and we can all of a sudden start to smell the apple pie cooking in our oven, like, oh, or the burning apple pie. Oh, I better go take it out, right? Like, that is that ability to have this awareness of our surroundings. We don't have to be hyper focused on orienting to be aware of our environment. Next one, self-awareness. This is with yourself and your insides. That's the second word. Yourself and your insides. Also known as your interoception. Intero, which is a fancy word, interoception, your perception of your internal environment. This is a hot topic word these days because we see now and we know that building interoception is essential for healing trauma and restoring regulation back to the system. It is not enough to just talk and work with thoughts. It's not enough to just meditate and be mindful. It's not enough to go to the boxing gym and get our sweat on. It's not enough to just have healthy food. All these are important. But in order to really get into the crux of working with the autonomic nervous system physiology, we must get better at listening to our organs and the sensations that come from our organs and our tissues. Four, follow your impulse. I've already really covered this, so I'll just say listening to your body's organic needs. I again always go back to the baby. When a baby cries, is it because they're trying to be difficult? No, they're in physiological distress. Something isn't right, and their only way of getting attention is to cry, to make whimpers, heck, to scream, right? Something is wrong, and they are asking for someone on the outside to co-regulate, attune to them. So that their body's needs are met with food, with connection, with safety, cooling down. Maybe they're too hot. I have a firm belief that most babies are clothed too much, with all the fancy dresses and socks and hats that get made for them. And they actually have a lot of fat on them that insulates them, babies. It's called brown fat. And I think most babies, in my opinion, are probably a little too dressed up for things. So again, I'm hot, mom, take this off. But if mama can't or papa can't attune and see the redness in the face, that little one is just going to keep crying and crying and being uncomfortable and in stress. Next one down, joints and diaphragms, number five. So these are little containers, and this is where you have to use your imagination because there aren't actual Tupperware containers in your body. They're your body spaces, they're your body organs. I try to make jokes sometimes. Savannah's laughing. So these are little spaces in the body that need to be open and resilient and in flow. I'll say this again. These are little containers and spaces that need to be open and resilient and in flow. I'll use an example. Have you ever been so shocked with something that's occurred that you gasped? Right? That puts the diaphragm, the true diaphragm, into a bit of a shock state. Your breath stops. But when your breath stops, is it just the breath that's impacted? What's below the diaphragm? Your guts. What's above the diaphragm? Your heart, your throat. So, one thing shutting down and going into shock will impact that flow to the whole system. Now, if we lived in a world where our environment was always threatening, which many of us did, and we're constantly bracing for the next either energetic hit or actual hit, or we have to protect ourselves because we just have to. Before we know it, our body parts are so tight and so rigid that we don't even know that there's a difference. The opposite, and this comes down to the fight, flight, freeze, shutdown, collapse. Some people have that rigidity, and others have. There's no energy. The system can't have that vibrancy. So everyone here is going to be unique in how their dysregulation might show up. And I had my uniqueness. My husband had his uniqueness. All of our people working with us here who are practitioners, they all had their unique story of how their systems had to protect. But these containers, these spaces, part of the work is getting them to know they can let down their guard, or they can start to have more energy if they've been shut down and collapsed. So again, these are little containers and spaces that need to be open, resilient, and in flow. And then what occurs is when we start to have that happen, this is where emotion might start to come through. This is where memories might start to pop up. But the difference is you've just made some space in your swimming pool by opening up these containers. I'll say that again. You've just made some space in your swimming pool by opening up these containers, which means when you feel the emotion or you have that, what we would call flashback, that memory, there's actually space for that intensity to move. And it doesn't feel like it's strangling you, or you don't feel like you have to shut down because you can be with it a little bit more. And yes, it's totally possible to have both collapse and rigidness in the body at the same time. You can have some body parts that have more armoring, typically the shoulders. This is not always, but the shoulders will have more armoring. That's where all the tight neck traps comes in, tight jaw. But then the pelvis will have no life to it. It'll be, collapsed. So everyone's different. That was just one example. But yeah, you can have both at the same time. So the joints and diaphragms are so important. That's all I'll say right now. They're so important. Next one down, kidney adrenal interface. Kidney adrenal interface. So this is the primary organ system that goes on alert. That's the first word. Alert. And reacts severely in a stressful situation. So, for those that don't know your anatomy, all good. You've got two kidneys that are about the size of your fist. Some of us might only have one. We can actually function without one kidney. And they're kind of mid-back, behind. And on top of each kidney is a little, I call it a hat. And it's easy to find these online, these pictures. It's a gland, it's a bunch of tissue called your adrenal gland. Ad means above renal. I'm sure some people have heard of the term renal failure when someone's kidneys aren't working anymore. That's what that means. So adrenal just means above the kidney. And that little kidney is a tissue that secretes adrenaline, also known as epinephrine, noradrenaline, cortisol. So when you watch the fancy medical shows and someone's like crashing or someone's having an anaphylactic shot, hit them with an EpiPen or hit them with adrenaline, pumps them back up, gives them a shock of sympathetic energy. Not sympathetic meaning, oh, I'm so sorry this happened to you. Sympathetic nervous system, fight flight energy. So those are your kidneys, those are your adrenals. And then the kidneys, their job, that they create urine, right? So fluids, they balance the chemistry in our body. And it's very, very important that we have good chemistry so that our system works properly. So back to this. So primary organ system that goes on alert and reacts severely in a stressful situation. We work with the kidney adrenal interface so that we stop the system from hurting and scaring itself. That's the words. So important. We work with this, and we'll work with this when we get to lab four. We work with these so that the system stops hurting and scaring itself. And the reason this is important, and this work was taught to me by one of my main mentors, so I have to give her props, Kathy Kane. She is also a somatic experiencing trainer, practitioner, colleague. And she really discovered those who are living with deep shutdown, so deep collapse, and also high levels of activation, we might call this anxiety, it's not enough to just sense the body and orient and do more traditional trauma release work. The system has so much fear and so much protection that these kidneys and adrenals are literally, they're either exhausted. So when we hear the term adrenal burnout, adrenal fatigue, this is where this comes in. They can't pump out any more good stuff. They've been pumping for some since in utero. And for some mamas, their moms have been on high alert because of their trauma. And this is where the transgenerational trauma stuff comes in at this level. So what this means is we want to actually work, and you'll work with your intention because you can't go in and hold your kidneys and adrenals. But Kathy taught us, many of us here, to work with these with an intentionality of we're safe. It's okay. Yes, there was lots of threat, lots of threat. We don't want to deny that. But right now, we're going to just imagine you're in pools of salt water that are warm and lovely and the way you would rock a baby if they're scared. So we're, because that's essentially when a baby is in big physiological distress, it doesn't work when they're in the crib and you say, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. You got to pick them up. And often you rub the back, right? When you hug someone who's having distress, what do you naturally do? You soothe the back. Animals, you pat their back. Their kidneys are there too. So we do these things naturally. And so we're going to intentionally work with them to give these little suckers the message, yeah, you were really scared and you were really freaked out and you've been pumping adrenaline and cortisol forever. And it's okay to just stop a little bit because we also have to titrate the letting down. And we have to stop hurting and scaring the system. So for many of us, we're not in our abusive families anymore, work environments, relationships. We really are in a safe situation. But why is it that our system is still creating this threat? It's because it's been so wired and grooved into us that that is our language right now. Right? We know how to speak survival stress really well. And so part of this is relearning how to speak a different language of, okay, maybe it's not that bad. And as I tune into these adrenals, I'm also going to tune into my feet and I'm going to sense my breath and these sorts of things. So we're literally bringing more safety to the system through our intention and through working with this kidney adrenal interface. The final sentence here. And this is just fact. This is reality. It can take up to 2 years. And I'm being generous with this. It could also be more, or it could be less. Everyone's different. Everyone's different, right? But I'm just being honest. It can take up to 2 years to recover and repair the circuitry, even after the stress and the stimulus and the trauma triggers are gone. And this is where I say, think about an area of the earth that has been decimated with monocropping, where you're just putting pesticides and bad stuff, and it's not a good ecosystem, or areas of natural disaster where, you know, things have just been decimated, like with fire example, for example. Over time, if that area isn't touched and it's given the opportunity to recover, the terrain is given the opportunity to recover, it recovers. Right? It recovers. It starts to grow back. All these things start to happen that give life back to the system. Now, the difference with us humans, we're not like that plant land that might be, okay, we're just going to let it recover. We're going to let it regenerate. We have to actively regenerate by not allowing more toxins into our system. And those toxins can be bad things in our food and our water. It could be people, but it also can be our own behaviors, our own adaptations to how we've coped, right? This is where addictions come in. We will have addictions to help soothe us. because we've had too much fight flight or too much shutdown. So we need something to put us into more baseline, even keelness. And so part of this work is how can we restore the system, take away the stressors, build the capacity, build the swimming pool, and let the terrain heal naturally. And yeah, we have some folks here who are saying, you know, one person, I 7 years in and I'm still working on it. Just newsflash, I didn't get out of my functional freeze until about 3 years ago. I'm still functional. I still am thinking and feeling and progressing and achieving and having good relationships. But this shows how sneaky these survival stresses are, right? So there's no shame in it. It just shows for some of us, we might have to do a little more time and a little more slowness with this work. And for others, it might be a little faster. Okay, let's go to page four. And maybe take a second to just regroup, see what you need to do. Do you need to move? Do you need to stretch, have something to drink, something to eat? Maybe you need to lie down, stand up. So listen to the impulse. All right, page four. So back to the swimming pool and beach ball analogy. So another page here with lots of blanks, lots of blank spaces. So the first line there. The many balls packed into this pool, so I'm reading from the handout. The many balls packed into this pool represent the stressors, toxicities stored within the body. So again, back to that image that was on the first page. We got our pool crammed with balls. So the many balls packed into this pool represent the stressors, that's the first word, toxicities stored within the body. And I use the word toxicities very broadly, right? It can be toxic stress, toxic situations that are embedded in us. It could also be true toxins from the environment, chemicals, food, water, air, people. So this is nervous system dysregulation. The system is maxed out. It's tapped out. And as we know, this is when we start to get sick. For some people, they might not show symptoms until the balls are overflowing. And for others, the moment a few balls extra are in there, they feel it. Everyone's very different. I think my parents' generation, which was the generations of born in 1938 to 1946, and then, of course, my parents' parents, they were masters at stuffing stuff in and pushing through and pushing through. Based on the wars that were occurring, all those things. I know there's war now, but we also have a lot more, amenities, food supply is plentiful, all these things. Of course, it's not the case everywhere, but I do feel that there's also a collective overflow of dysregulation. And we, because again, back to that picture of everything connecting, we're all connected. So we feel this overflow in all parts of the world. And we also don't want that to dysregulate us more, right? So this comes back to working with ourselves, knowing this system is the one thing we can control and we can work on it. Very little we have control over other than ourselves. And that's why we want to have good regulation so we feel good even amidst chaos and all that kind of stuff. So line one to five there. So many balls. I've already said these in some ways throughout our call, but I'll repeat them. So many balls, in quotes, means number one, old survival stress. Old survival stress. Old survival stress. That this is my preferred way of calling it trapped trauma. So also known as trapped trauma. So that's what's under that line. I like old survival stress because it's a bit more neutral. It's just survival stress. It's fight, flight, freeze, and then the shutdown and collapse that we have maybe been carrying on our back or wherever for so long. and it's old, right? And we want it out of the system. Number two, chronic daily stress. Those in the West are masters at this. How many things can I fit in today into my agenda? And then I'll be the superhero mom, right? Or the superhero dad, or the executive that can work for 20 hours and be proud that I only slept 4 hours and all these things, right? It's a very go, 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 quick rat race mindset. So chronic daily stress is still a thing. And this is another behavior, another wiring that many of us will have to work with to rewire. So for many of us, we grew up in a situation where we had to do a lot to stay safe. We might have been the oldest sibling. This is a very common one I heard in my practice where parents were literally not abusive, but they just weren't around. They were working, 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 right? And so the older sibling had to do everything, cooking, cleaning, making sure their younger siblings did their homework, getting to school on time, all these things. That can put us into a state of always on the go, very, very on. And inevitably, what I see in those folks is the collapse later in life. This is where the autoimmune comes in. These are where the cancers come in. Because the system, even though there's no distinct trauma and threat, they're revving at a rate that they didn't realize they were at. And then the system burns out. So one might find as they go through this work that you will start to be worried because you're not accomplishing what you used to do. And this is where you have to have a talk with yourself to go, maybe that way of being in the past wasn't really conducive to my overall health. And we hear this all the time. Someone has the heart attack at age 50, you got to decrease the stress in your life, right? It isn't anymore about cholesterol and salt. It's like you are stressed. How can you take the stress out of your life? This is where this falls in. So that is still accurate medical advice that doctors give, right? You've got too much stress in your life, but then they don't often go deep into why is that there. So our interest here is trying to figure out why is that there? Why can't you sit on the couch and chill out for half an hour without feeling guilty? Yeah. Without feeling like I see some people nodding, without feeling like I must be doing something. This again, I think, is a lot of the transgenerational trauma of many of our parents and grandparents literally were living to fight for their lives, to find food, to all these things. And so, okay, do we have to keep going at that clip is very important to assess. Three, biological impulses that aren't followed. So again, this is in reference to how do we get these balls trapped in our system? Biological impulses that aren't followed. So I'll be very crude in this. If we have gas in our intestines and we don't and we hold it in because of fear of passing gas either through our intestines or up through our mouth, that is building pressure in the system. Right? It builds pressure in the system and it doesn't feel good. This is trapping stress in the system. So I often give the example of when you're on a plane, if you've flown, you know that the whole plane is pressurized. And if you're really aware, you feel it when the pilot locks the plane and you go, oof, you feel it. And that's where your water bottle, right? That's where the jars in your luggage start to explode if they're not properly sealed or there's too much pressure. So when we hold things in, it creates stress. It adds balls to our quote unquote swimming pool, which leads into number four and five that fall into biological impulses that are not followed. Number four, not letting emotions out. Not letting our emotions out. So we have a desire to cry. We hold it back, right? We have a desire to speak up for ourselves and we freeze. We have a desire to laugh and enjoy the moment that's so good, and we don't. So with every emotion, there is an expression. And so those expressions are getting stored inside. Has anybody here held back the tears so badly that it feels like your throat is going to burn? Yeah, I see someone. Yeah. It hurts. And that's when you know, okay, something deep has to come out. So again, be gentle with yourselves if you know, wow, I haven't let out these emotions in a long time to that degree. No wonder why my swimming pool is so full, right? No wonder why I feel anxiety and panic and I have symptoms. We know symptoms like anxiety, like bowel problems, skin problems can be connected to the holding in of these emotions. A great book that really is kind of, I think, one of the best ones on this is Gabor Mate's book, When the Body Says No. It really talks about the holding in and repression, especially of anger. This is where the people pleasers come in. If you've been a people pleaser, right? And usually that starts because our parents are still children. And we actually, in many cases, when we're young, are more mature than our parents because we're more impulsive, we're feeling more. And they're already shut down. You see how that works? And so we have to then attune to that lack of safety. And so then we start to shut down. Five, this kind of goes with emotions. So the number four was not letting emotions out. Five is sensations that are not felt. Sensations that are not felt. You feel that tightness burning in your throat and you strategically shut it off, right? You go do something, you get busy, right? You do whatever. I'm going to distract myself. Those will also store balls in our pool. I have in very small print, apologies for the small print, there's a little asterisk there. This is deliberate or unconscious. So some of us might consciously suppress something. And others might do it and they don't even know they're doing it. Now, sometimes we actually have to suppress an emotion for the situation. If we have a little kid and they just broke their arm and there is a compound fracture sticking out, it is essential that you hold it together and stay calm. Because the look on the parent's face will actually make the kid more traumatized than the actual accident itself. This is true. So, for the parents there, the caregivers, that's where you got to put your big boy and girl pants on and be like, thinking you're my, oh boy, we got to get to the hospital. But you don't want to show that look. That's where you have to go in caretaker mode, first responder mode. Hey, buddy, I think we've had an accident. We're going to get you wrapped up into the car. We're going to take you to the hospital where the good doctors can help you, right? And that's where you will have to process that horror and that fear on your own without the kids seeing you. So there is a time and a place for suppressing this stuff. But when you're in the comfort of your own home, you're working with this stuff, you're an adult, you're with adults, they're responsible for their own emotional capacity. That's when you let these things out, right? Next one down. The goal is to release those balls. So, I have a picture here now of the pool. It's got the same amount of balls, and we're taking two balls out or one ball out, but then I've, made it realistic. One ball is coming back in because we'll be just really realistic here, right? Ooh, I've gotten this one big ball out, and now another one's flip was just sneaking in. But even in this picture of two balls less in the pool, you can already see there's more space. All right, let's go to page five. Page five, top of the page. So here we have a different picture. Now there's two exits, if you look closely. Two exits to this pool, one on the top, one on the bottom. So we want to create more exit paths to release those balls. So this is where some of these nervous system health basics can play a part. If we know we disconnect a lot from our environment, that's where orienting can actually keep our capacity a bit wider. If we know we disconnect from our body, that's where noticing the ground under us can serve a purpose to keep our flow, to keep our capacity a bit more bit more open. So we want to create more exit paths to release those balls. Next line down, we also want to make more space in general. So another example, apologies, I'll go up. Another example of exit paths would be allowing ourselves to cry, allowing ourselves to set a boundary, allowing ourselves to pass gas, allowing ourselves to go to bed when we're tired, to resist that urge for that second wind that we often get at night, which is the cortisol hitting back up, right? Resist the urge to do the things that we know are old behaviors that don't serve us. So, how can we release again? So, that's another way of saying exit paths. So, the next one down, we want to create more space in general. Now, this is where these things kind of connect. It's like they're the same thing because when we release the emotion, when we let the gas pass, when we let the boundary be put up, because we're not storing more in, we are naturally creating more space. So they kind of interchange these things. This work is very non-linear, and yet we have to linearly go through it. So I just want everyone to understand that exit paths also create more space, and more space has more opportunity for things to exit. So space means capacity. Next line down. So we also want to make more space in general, and then space means capacity. That's the word. Capacity too, and then I'm going to go through these things. But if you look at that pool, even just letting your eyes see that, and then if you look at the first pool, even the focus is a little lighter. There's more space, the pool is bigger, it's the same amount of balls. So, number one, again, this is having more space, meaning more capacity. So, capacity to number one, sense and be with the body sensations. So, sense and be with the body sensations. That's the first line. So, an example might be, I'm sensing this heat in my chest. And I'm just going to feel it as I also orient a little bit. Or I'm going to notice the ground under me. Or it could be as simple as, wow, I'm actually, my feet are really cold. I'm going to be with it, but I'm also going to put some socks on. And then I'm going to feel as I put those socks on, the warmth come back. Those little shifts in the physiology give us clues and cues of, okay, I'm actually attending to my needs. Yeah. So simple. Like, what? How would putting your socks on when your feet cold make any difference to the nervous system? It does, right? You're again, imagine you're that baby that's cold and you're attending to yourself. You're attuning to yourself, and then you're offering yourself what your system needs. So this is very self-directed work. Number two. Experience and emote emotions. Lots of ease there. Experiencing and emote emotions. Basically, let the emotions flow. Inevitably, many of you will do some of the lessons that have very few, if any, of our lessons have to do with emotions. You're going to see that. The only one lesson that really taps into emotions in a more deliberate way is when we get into working with healthy aggression. Healthy aggression. But nowhere are we working with sadness or joy or none of it. And that's purposeful. It's because we're wanting to work with the body and its capacity, and then whatever is naturally wanting to come out in its own time, we let that happen. We let that happen. Number three, notice what is happening on the inside. So, again, this is in reference to having more capacity. Notice what is happening on the inside. Inside meaning your interoception. Now, There'll be some of us who have never considered our gut or what it does or the sounds it makes, the juices that are produced in the digestive organs. There's a lot of juices, right? Breaks down protein and fat and carbohydrate. And what can happen is if we've never felt these inside organs moving, we can get a little startled. Like, am I okay? Like, I just felt this big gurgle, or I just felt this big poof, right? That's the gallbladder pumping out bile. Like, when we've been shut down, we don't even know what's going on in here. And so, as we start to grow more capacity and more interoception, we will notice what's happening inside more frequently. And this is good. This is a really good thing. But sometimes it can startle us. But just know it's normal, right? It's a normal thing. Four, be with a stress outside of you while also feeling the internal experiences. I will repeat this. So, be with a stress. Be with a stress outside of you while also feeling the internal experiences. I mean, this happened to me yesterday. I'm driving down the highway here and I knew something was wrong because there was no traffic. And all of a sudden it just got trafficy. I'm like, what's going on? And it was quite late. And sure enough, there was a car. I'm sure people have experienced this, pulled over, totally safe, totally safe. Hood up. So clearly they had mechanical problems. Everyone is slowing down to look. You don't have to look. Like, not your problem, right? This ability to just stay focused. Yep, there's something there. I'm going to notice my internal sensation to pull and look. Not safe to do that. So I use that example because it just happened yesterday. And I thought of this. So, how can we be with the stress outside? Because that's a stressor. Ooh, shit, someone's broken down. If we are overly empathetic, we start to worry with, are they going to get home? Blah, blah, blah. Maybe the person's pregnant, like all these things. So, how can we just be like, yep, car is broken over, not my problem. I'm going to keep going. But I might notice the pull, right? So, I'm sure you all have examples where you notice things on the outside. Things that might not even be happening in our own country, and yet it triggers us and it causes us problems. So how can we be with the stress on the outside? Because there will be, and feel our internal experiences, but stay grounded and in our own system. Number five, think clearly. So this comes to higher brain. Inevitably, as you grow more capacity, as you take these stressors out of your pool, as your system gets more regulated, and I've heard this, people will find, wow, I can read a book. I want to read a book, right? I want to learn something. I want to pick up that guitar that I haven't played with in so long. I want to build a science project with my kid. Like all these things that you might have had no capacity for, this will occur. We will get this higher brain back on board. Because our higher brain cannot work when we're living in survival stress. And this connects to so many things that we see, especially in kids right now with learning troubles and not being able to focus and attend to things. So, again, number five, think clearly, communicate, and socially engage. We're social creatures. We're meant to engage, not with the whole world. It has been shown humans need a very specific tribe. Small community to be in good relationship. When we have too many relationships, things fracture, right? Anybody who's online knows it is impossible to keep up with every single person you've met online. It is a full-time job, right? So I do believe we're really meant to have core group. It doesn't have to be our blood family. It has to be small core groups of people, quality relationships. E, final one. The best scenario is the best scenario. And this is in terms of the good old swimming pool and beach ball analogy, continual exits and lots of space. And on page six, there's the final Mona Lisa of regulation. Many exit paths, Balls are still going to come in. That's another thing. You will get stressed. There will be triggers. You will have life events that throw you into a bit of an activation or a shutdown. This is normal. You actually want your survival mechanisms to work when there's a real threat, right? You really want them to work, but we don't want to stay stuck in them. So it's kind of like from this day forward, when you stub your toe on the coffee table, or you burn your, these are my two classic examples, you burn your thumb on the kettle or something like that. Really give yourself the space to pause, feel, ground, orient, and you will be surprised how that allows your system to come back down to your baseline. Whereas if you stub your toe, you burn your finger, and you keep going, you're storing that survival stress. You're keeping more balls in your pool than need be. So if you don't think about anything else, don't worry about your old traumas right now. Just going forward in your day, use this analogy. How can I not let more balls get stuck inside? That in itself will create space, especially when your default is to keep, velcroing balls to yourself, right? So how can you be a little more intentional at pausing, slowing down, not rushing, feeling the feet, orienting, noticing the breath, all the things that we did at the beginning of the call where I guided you through those things. So yeah, someone just said, I recently did that and I didn't shut the pain down. And it took a lot longer, and it took a lot longer to subside. So in other words, it took a little longer because you weren't shutting it down, right? And this is another thing where we have to be okay with pausing and waiting. It's like this might take 5 minutes. What will happen is it will get faster as your system gets more familiar because you've got a new language, right? All right, everyone. Big first call. Lots of the same topics, though. Just think swimming pool, beach balls. We want to make that pool bigger by the practices that we're doing. And we want to use our awareness to be aware when we get more balls in our pool, and how can we keep more of, how can we have it so that less balls stick? And eventually, as we build more capacity with the exercises, the old balls that have been like at the bottom of the pool, they will start to bubble up and funnel out. So just know that we're just at the beginning, and there's a lot to learn, and to take it one step at a time, titrate your learning. Make sure to ask questions. Our team, our moderators really do love answering questions, reading your questions. For them, it's a full-on process of connecting, attuning to your questions. So in the general question thread, or if you have a question about, one of the videos or one of the lessons, at the bottom of each page, there's always a place where you can ask a question. Just make sure that you say question, and then they can see that you have a question. Okay. So I know that there was a Q&A call last week with Jen. Seth is doing the next Q&A call this Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific. As always, everything is recorded, everything's transcribed, if you can't make it live. All right, friends. Thanks, Carrie, for being in the chat. Thanks, Susan and Ari, for being there and supporting the container. We will see you next Tuesday for our next training call. Bye, everyone.